Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, Sports to the Max. I've been waiting a long time to bring this man in the studio. The one and only, the Foxy Ken Foxworth, needs no introduction to people from a certain era of Gopher football.
Brother, honor. Thank you so much for bringing me in here, Max.
How you doing?
I'm blessed. How about you?
I'm doing good. We got so much to talk about, and obviously the pay-for-play we'll get to and Gopher football we'll get to in a minute. But I was talking before I had you on about this is the only man I know that's gone for a jog with a sitting president. Actually, not sitting there, running together. You went for a run with Bill Clinton back when he was in office. And so when I brought that up, you know, you and I have talked about it before, but I've never brought it up on the air. And somebody said, well, how did he end up going for a jog with Bill Clinton? I said, you know, I don't remember how it was, but explain how you ended up going for a jog with Bill Clinton.
Brother, it was like three times we did that.
Did you?
Yes, but the first time it was incredible. You know, the thing was is that I was trying to raise money because we didn't have money to raise for scholarships for the University of Minnesota Duluth campus. Well, we kept on trying because there was a lot of people of color up there as for African-American descent. Southeast Asian, and we had Native Americans who just didn't have cash. And we tried our best to get people to raise money. And matter of fact, we even brought Jerome and Morris Day
to come up there,
and we just couldn't pull it off. And something just told me to do a 155-mile run. And I had one of my closest friends, Gene Sperling, who worked for the Clinton administration at the time. And I told the chancellor, that I needed to come and I needed to go to Washington, D.C. to meet with President Clinton. And he really didn't know that I knew him like that. But he didn't know that I knew Gene Sperling like that. He was my roommate. And next thing you know, Gene Sperling got me to a one-on-one meeting with President Clinton.
In D.C.?
In D.C.
How did he do that? You know, it seems to me like these guys would just have 88 people waiting outside their door and 60 more waiting on hold. How do you do that?
I do not know. It was a blessing in disguise, and I thank him, and I thank this sister named Ada Posley, who got me into the door as well. I was just blessed. God had blessed me with that, and with that, next thing you know, I was right there in front of Hillary Clinton and President Clinton, and next thing you know, I asked a question, and he just wrote some stuff down, and next thing you know, when he came to the state of Minnesota, I was right next to him running. And that was a blessing. I was stunned, and I was dying too.
What's it like to when you walk into a room and there's the president? Were you nervous all day, and you go through the security of the White House, and what?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the first thing, you know, you go in there, and the next thing you know, I lost my wallet.
I want to see the president, but I don't have any ID.
Yeah, the only thing I had was not my Northwest racket and swim card.
Oh, yeah, the old blue card.
That's all I had. Yeah. And next thing you know, I showed it, and next thing you know, he had a mud shot when I was going through the guard. And it was like, damn, where'd they get this from? And they had a background check of me and everything else. So next thing you know, I went inside, and I went to the West Wing. And that's where Gene's office was at. And next thing you know, I had a ball with him. And next thing you know, he told me what I needed to say. We rehearsed it over and over again. And next thing you know, I walked and I was shaking President Clinton's hand and I forgot everything that I said.
Whoa. And so you sit with Clinton and what?
I said, President Clinton, I am honored to be a part of your presidency. I'm running for the University of Minnesota. I'd be glad for you to run with me to the University of Minnesota, all the way from Duluth. I would love for you, if there's any way that you can run at least a mile for me to the University of Minnesota, from Duluth all the way to Minneapolis. And he just told me, he said, well, Ken, you know, anything that you want me to do, let me know. And he looked at Gene, and he just shook his head, and next, you know, that was it.
He gave him the nod. The nod meant we're going to do it.
We're going to do it. And it was like,
Gene had seen the nod before, and he goes, okay, now I know I can put it in action.
Yeah, and I didn't believe it. And, you know, next thing you know, it was like, okay, it was done. And next thing you know, there was a little campaign that he was doing for one of the candidates. And next thing you know, he ran. And so once I did the 154-mile run, it was like, God, I mean, I was just stunned. And next thing you know, he called me back, and he wanted me to run again at the White House. And I was like, oh, snap. And
so you flew out there again?
I flew out there again.
And then he wanted you to do a ceremonial run with him or what?
Yes. And I ran with him with a couple people from NASA, and I ran with a young man who created the it was a program where they created this – I forgot the name of the program. I'm sorry.
But yeah, but it was a select group.
There was a select
group. And you guys are running, what, through D.C.?
Running through D.C.
What's the Secret Service like when you got the president running?
I was last, so I saw everybody who was coming out. So next thing you know, Secret Service was everywhere. I'm seeing folks that was coming from the back, the front, everything. And next thing you know, I was just at awe, just seeing every Secret Service from left and right. Man, it was just fantastic just to see not just running with them, but just it was AmeriCorps that those folks was at that was running with me. And once I got close to President Clinton, I was just trying to talk, kind of jive with him. And I said, you know, President Clinton, I see that, you got some New Balance. He said, yeah. He said, yeah, I love New Balance. They're American made.
Those are tennis shoes,
shoes. And he said, he said, Foxworth, I'd like to know what you got on. And I had Nikes. He said, well, Ken, where they made from? I'm like, okay, I'm going to pass.
You had to ask.
I had to ask because, you know, it was made in Japan.
Yeah, he said, okay, you want New Balance, you want Nike.
So I faded back again.
Wow, that's once in a lifetime, three times in a lifetime for you.
Yeah, it was. So
like when you're there, do you feel he's always been known as being ingratiating and makes people feel really comfortable, and you always hear that one-on-one, he's just tremendous, that he makes you feel like you're the only person in the room. Is that the way it felt?
Mike, this is something that I would cherish for the rest of my life. He made my family feel, you know, great, but the other thing is that it felt like I knew this man. I just knew him. I just knew that I've been knowing this man for all my life. I have never met, and I've been, you know, deputy chair of the Black Caucus.
Yeah.
I've been, you know, super delegate for the DFL, the DNC. Been all over. And I have never felt a candidate or a president that I say that this man, President Clinton, is one of the greatest personality I ever met in my life.
You ever meet Obama?
Yes, I was the first superdelegate who endorsed him before anybody, before he even went to, when he made his announcement to Illinois, I was the first one who gave him
the announcement. Now you got a problem, though, because Hillary Clinton, you just endeared yourself to the Clintons, and now you're endorsing Obama.
I had to. I mean, you know, because I thought that he was the best candidate at the time.
So you did it and didn't look back?
I didn't look back.
And you met him eventually, too?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was no problem. I met him before he was a senator. And so, you know, I saw him. I saw exactly what he was doing. I saw exactly what the need was. And I saw that he had big ears. So it was cool.
Wow, that's quite a life. Now, Ken, when you come back, we're going to talk about the Gophers. We're going to talk about should they get paid to play. Ken Foxworth, the one and only in studio. Mike Max, Sports to the Max, back with him after this.
Sports to the Max.
Welcome back. Sports to the Max. Ken Foxworth in the studio. We covered the part about him running with the presidents. Pretty good way to start it. We move on. Now, Ken's a former defensive back for the Minnesota Gophers. And when you played, was Cal Stahl your coach the whole time?
Unfortunately, not, but I wish he was. But my first two, 3 years, he was.
And then?
Then it was Smokey Joe Salem.
Oh, so you were there, your last year was when Smokey Joe came.
Correct.
And he came with a lot, you know, a lot of P.J. Fleck kind of stuff, young and innovative and all that stuff. What was the difference, though?
his attitude. The difference was is that he had to run and shoot, and that was cool. And then after that,
broke that out against Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean he took it.
Arch Leister almost got beat.
That's right. And then once Shanahan left, that was it. And then from that, everything just fell off.
For people not familiar, Mike Shanahan, the renowned coach, probably going to the Hall of Fame,
correct,
was the offensive coordinator at that time for the Gophers.
Exactly. And when once Shanahan left, I think that everything else fell apart. You had one of the greatest wide receivers of all time, and right now Chester Cooper, he was right on. I mean, he made some excellent plays, and there was a lot of people. And then you had a tight end, a young man named Carroll. He was there, and
Jay
from
Carroll,
that,
yeah.
Jay Carroll, outstanding athletes. And so you had the Fonhorst. They was at that time. So, you know,
were you there at all with Upchurch, or was he gone?
He was gone at the time when I was there.
Rick Upchurch was one of the great players to go through.
Yes.
We can't forget about him.
That's right.
How good he's been. Of course, he went to Denver and had a great career. And speaking of politics, he dated Condoleezza Rice at one time.
Oh, yeah. You know, he... I know some stories about that, but I can't tell you.
No, we save those for the commercial break.
But I tell you, there's one athlete that I say to me is one of the greatest defensive backs that I ever seen right now in a Gopher uniform, and that's Winfield.
Yeah, because they almost can say to him, we're not even going to tell you where to line up. You figure, where do you think the ball is going to be, and you go play, right?
He's a rover.
Yeah.
To me. The thing that gets me is that when I look at Winfield, I looked at him. I thought he was a senior when he was a freshman, mm-hmm. because he understands the game more than I ever seen in my lifetime. Being a University of Minnesota athlete, not just a athlete, but he's a student, and then from outside of being a student, he's a great person. And for me, I am. Please and honor just to say this man is a great young man. And I think he is.
I remember the night Tracy Clays, I was with him, and he got both Seth Green and Antoine Winfield the same day.
Yeah.
He turned Seth Green from Oregon and got Antoine Winfield. And Winfield, of course, grew up here to an extent through his freshman year at Eden Prairie and then moved on to Houston but had, you know, ties here.
Mm-hmm.
My grand says the only freshman that's ever played at Eden Prairie, ever been on the field as a varsity, you know, since he's been there at least. And I guess down in Texas they must have thought a little undersized, but again, like Tyrone Carter, doesn't matter.
Thank you. I think Tyrone is a hitter. I mean, he'll hit anything. But as for no disrespect for Carter, but this young man got the whole total package, and I think the blessing of him having his father, this man sure he got it going on every time. When you saw the defense, the University of Minnesota lose, it's because that young man got injured.
Yeah, last year they had problems when he wasn't in the lineup. Obviously.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now since he's back into the lineup.
Well, I mean, the Fresno State game he won, you know, 2 years in a row basically.
Exactly.
Without him, not last year, it would only have been a tie, but this year they probably would have caught the ball and the game was over.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
They would have won.
Yes.
So it's that simple. Foxy, they came out today with, we're going to pay him to play. You've long been involved. You know many of the coaches, not just when you played, but since then. How do you think this strikes, and how does a college football player feel about this today?
Sure, I think it's the best thing that ever happened. I mean, it don't make sense that you have the greatest tool and you don't pay them. The athlete, the student athlete, is the tool. I mean. You have the coaches making millions of dollars.
And now, to be fair, we're talking about football and basketball, really.
That's all.
Yeah.
That's all. I mean, you know, you got football right now making, what, $14 billion a year?
They're paying for everything.
I'm paying for everything. And so from that, you got them. I mean, you got them paying that kind of money. Football, $14 billion. Billion. And so with that, you got – the coaches making millions, the university making millions, the administration making millions, the advertiser making millions, the TV making millions, and now you're talking about the product, the student athletes, it's making nothing.
Okay, let's take it a step further because you brought up a good point, and it goes a little bit hand in hand with what we're talking about today. You played with a guy named Kent Kitzman.
That's right.
Kent Kitzman was a great fullback from Rochester, I believe, right?
Exactly.
And he carried the ball how many, 50 sometimes in the game, right?
That's right.
And you won the game.
Won the game.
And he had like 56. It was some unbelievable number.
That's right.
And then he didn't play the next year, right? Injuries, right?
Because, that's right.
Because maybe what the toll that they took on him.
The toll that was so great. And then he got hurt. And so my problem was with that is that he got so banged up. He got hurt. So what happened? He got injured. The problem is if there was a scholarship, then from that, and there was an issue, then the scholarship should have hooked him up with workman comp. Okay, so if there's no workman comp, he should have got paid. You know,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing.
There's no nothing.
And we have accepted this for years, obviously,
right.
Across the board. His career ended.
That's
and
right.
Now it's a slippery slope because you go, well, how injured was someone? How significant did that change the rest of their life? It's going to be hard, but that will be the next chapter as we head towards almost an employee relationship here. That in football for sure, but all sports, because even if injured in any sport, how are they going to address that? How are they going to, and how is it different for a sport that makes millions like the football program versus programs that lose money?
That's right. Now, here's the issue. My problem is that, one, is that you have folks like myself, and you got folks who are in a situation now who are scared, who never played pro ball, who had concussions, that's
absolutely
in the position.
And it manifests itself
that's
the same
right.
way, but she's never played in the NFL.
Never
no,
played.
No pot to collect from.
That's right. So where's the money? Tons of money at the University of Minnesota and other institutions and everything else that they got hurt. They need to be in a position of being compensated. That they got hurt, misused at the University of Minnesota.
And every institution.
In every institution. I'm not trying to. Yes.
Has people that have concussions.
That's right. Concussions, yep. Shoes, torn cartilage, ligaments, shoulders, all of this.
But now what's difficult then, Foxy, is, okay, yeah, you were there and they were making money. But over at this program here, they were losing money when they played. So they were just doing it as a service to the kids. I don't know how you sort out who has what coming.
Well, let's look at this.
Or does it become too expensive and cost prohibitive if we're not careful, at least for programs that don't make millions?
Let's look at this. I mean, just think. In 1954, there was a thing called Board of Education. So once they made it official, they was doing the same thing. But they found a way to make it happen. Okay? So they had to make segregation become reality. So now, since it's getting ready to be official, they got to make a way to make it happen. And so that's the way it's got to be. They got to find a way. It's just like right now.
But can you imagine right now if you start trying to find solutions, how complicated that's going to be?
Well, just remember, check this out. Okay, you and I, same age.
Foxy.
Well, okay.
Foxy.
Okay. Well, just remember when
I remember being getting out of going in third grade, going and watching you play.
Okay.
Memorial Stadium.
But just remember when you was at Central Gym when you were playing you, and we had a great time and
we
everything
did,
else.
Man, you couldn't guard me, but it was good.
Yeah, man. But you know, it was my knees, man. But
you
know
what
how that
me.
Is.
Yeah, I just kept sticking that jumper for 20, saying layup, Foxy, layup.
There you go, but this is what I gotta say, man. But you know, you remember Van Varonsky?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Claw Master.
The Claw.
Yeah, I love him, man. Shoot.
I saw Greg Gagne at the health club as we talked about some of the
I love it. But you know, at the time it was WWA, wasn't
it? WWE, World, whatever.
That's right. And it came down to be what? World's Wrestling Association.
Yeah.
But now it's WW what?
E.
It becomes World Wrestling Entertainment.
Yeah.
Now, this is what it is. It's all about what?
I don't dispute you at all.
Yeah.
I just wonder how they're going to come to conclusions.
Sooner or later, it's going to be in a position where they got to understand that it's going to be entertainment, okay? And so they got to find a way to figure that out, okay? So sooner or later, they will figure that out.
You think coaches are scared? Because they've got to support this, and at the same time, it could affect their salary or – if nothing else, if they're in the wrong marketplace and they can't get enough sponsors, it's going to affect their employment.
Yeah, but you know what? There's a will, there's a way. And so from that, they will figure it out. And my thing is that, hey, the issue is not about just playing the players. It's just to be in a position of making it equal and making it to a point where it's sound. and making it to a point where they understand that, hey, enough is enough. This is an old wheel that needs to be fixed, and it's about time.
You think someday we'll look back and say, I can't believe there was a time when they didn't pay these kids?
Exactly.
Now there is this flip side to that, and that is if you get a full scholarship and you get a Pell Grant, you're getting paid already to go to school.
Yeah, but a Pell Grant only lasts for 4 to 5 years. But the problem is that, you know, if you use that all that time, so then from that Pell Grant don't last that long. See, the problem is that if you don't have a Pell Grant and your family don't have a minimum of what, $35,000, and you exceeded that much, you don't have a Pell Grant. The problem that you have is that most of the time folks be thinking, well, that's a half scholarship. And people don't understand that most people really don't understand what a half scholarship was until people understand and tell what a half scholarship and what a full scholarship was. And most of the time, coaches wasn't telling students that what it was.
I see. So they'd say you're getting a full scholarship, and you go, great. And you're right. You don't have to pay for school.
That's right.
But we're actually splitting it half and half, and you don't know it. So, and, yeah, we're giving you a full ride, but you can also, if you're really good, get a full ride plus.
That's right.
Yeah, I got you.
And so now you stuck on stupid. And so now you thinking that you got a full ride, and then next thing you know, you got 2 or 3 years that you need to that scholarship, and now you realize that you used that scholarship all because you thought that you got some extra money, and that extra money was your Pell Grant. And next thing you know, you're trying to maintain, and next thing you know, you lost.
But they got to educate kids on that.
That's exactly what's going on.
Before I let you go, tell me about the inner city. You worked in the inner city for a long time. I was at the hospitality house. I emceed their banquet the other night, and obviously that's a staple on the north side, as you're well aware. There's I always get a beacon of hope from that banquet because they're doing so many good things, specifically in the hospitality house. And I always get concerned because I hear the stories of the problems that we face. Give me the three biggest problems in the inner city right now that scare you the most.
The most scariest problem is not understanding that we have to start believing in us. And us is us. There is a situation where drugs, yes, it's an issue, but us as people who live over north have to start looking at us as people in the north and start trusting north to stand up for north.
Amongst each other,
because we're pointing fingers, and when we start to point fingers, those fingers need to point back to us.
Okay.
And when we need to be in a position of saying, okay, how we stop this is to look at us and saying we are the responsibility.
Yeah,
of
we're not
us.
Waiting for somebody else to solve it for us.
No handouts. It's us.
Yep.
And when we start looking at us, we can build that mountain. We can build that building, and we need to start trusting in not just our leadership, but into us to realize that that bush can turn into a mountain, and that mountain can create a whole different synergy that can build in a whole different kind of politics or legal kind of things that can change the way that we look at our ward and build our ward back up.
Amen. Good thing to end on. Foxy, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Ken Foxworth, the one and only. Nice enough to come by, talk Gophers, talk Running with the Presidents, and much more. When we come back, why I am one of the stupidest people I've ever met. Stay with us.
Sports to the max.
Tomorrow night, Wolves get it on again, this time at Philadelphia. That'll be a good test. We got them all year, but tomorrow night specifically, 5:30 pregame, 6 o'clock, they'll tip it off. Towns against Embiid. And here we go. Fun 3 games for the Wolves so far. Finding ways to win. To win. I don't know what the future holds, but so far they've been better than what I thought. And, you know, and so much of this is they've gone right to Karl Anthony Towns and said, this is your team. And I thought that had the potential to really backfire on them. And it will backfire if they lose a number of games. And then, you know, people point fingers because you never bet against human nature. One thing I've learned in this world. Never, ever bet against or discount human nature. And if you think about that in every situation that you're in, you can stay a step ahead of it. If you study a situation and then you figure out, okay, if this person is a rival to that person, then human nature suggests to me that they will say bad things about that person or try to bring them down. Not because they're true, but because it's human nature. We compete, we want to get further ahead, that's what we're going to do. Now, human nature suggests that if somebody hires somebody, they will protect that person. Even if they're not good, they'll do it. Why? Because their butt's on the line too. That's human nature. There's a piece on Channel 4 tonight about what makes a good boss and the good question. I haven't seen it. I'm just interested to see what it is. Human nature suggests that if a coach recruits a kid and makes him his prized recruit, he's going to give him more chances than the kid that doesn't know it that walked on. Human nature. Never, ever bet against human nature. And once when you start to make decisions based on, it's really pretty easy to figure out. You just figure out what motivates people and how this situation affects them, and it's really easy to figure out what their nature is going to do for them. It's going to tell them whether or not they should be greedy or whether or not they should be generous or not, all that stuff is really just a product of human nature. And that's why I've always said we should spend more time in our education teaching kids about how other people think. Because when you know how other people think, you can be a master salesman. You can be a great teacher. You can be a great coach. You can be all kinds of things. But first you have to take a step back and try to figure out how somebody else thinks. And everybody thinks inside the confines of human nature. They know. I'm sorry if I'm getting too deep for you if you're listening tonight, Ron Shira, and said, but I mean, you could kind of figure it out. Figure out what they stand for, figure out what's important to them, and then most of the decisions they make are going to favor those situations. One of the biggest problems that you have, like say in the news industry in general, in the media right now in general, nationally especially, is there are two stories. There's the real story, and then there is what you want the story to be. They're two different things. There's what you want the story to be because it is a reflection of your favorite candidate, whatever it is. That's what you want the story to be, if it's advantageous to them. And then there is the reality of the acts that they committed or where they stand, all those things. Those are two different things. What you want the story to be and what the story is. What you want the story to be will be driven by what you believe and what you know, the outcomes that you want in your life. If you stand for low taxation, then you follow that person. You can figure out the decisions they're going to make. If you stand for whatever it is, political correctness, then it's pretty easy once you figure out they believe in being politically correct every time. It's pretty easy to figure out what decisions they're going to make, and then it's pretty easy to figure out how to navigate that person. Because it's human nature. They're going to make decisions that are in alignment with their values and what they believe in. And I think, the really good ones, the really street smart people, they've got this, they call it intuition. But what that really means is they're great observers of human nature. They're great observers of what makes the mind tick. They're great observers. And they know how to implement and work the system to their favor because they figure out, without thinking about, what other people really want. And once they figure that out, they got you. And I think some of the people that I know that are really smart, they know how to ask the right questions, and you reveal yourself to them without even knowing that you're revealing yourself to them. And they put that in their back pocket, and they know what makes you tick. And I think as a reporter, that's one of the biggest, greatest assets that you can have, is figuring out many times in an off-the-record, off-the-cuff situation what this person really believes in. And then you can predict everything else almost to a science as to how they're going to make decisions. Once you figure out what it is they really believe in, and the more you can get them to reveal themselves, and the more you can come up with a profile on them, it gets easy then. You kind of know what they're going to do. You can figure out if they're selfish, unselfish, whatever it is. But I think that if we could spend more time teaching our kids how to read people and how to figure it out and how to never bet against human nature, we'd have a more successful next generation, whatever it is. We certainly didn't get taught that except unless you took psychology courses. If you took psychology courses, then you figured it out. Now, that does not necessarily mean you don't even have to be highly intellectual or sophisticated or smart. You just need to be able to tune into the human mind and figure out based on their actions what they do. Don't ever pay attention to what somebody says. Pay attention to what they do. Jay Robinson told me that a long time ago, the coach, and I've used that. You can tell me anything you want, but I'm going to check and see what you actually do. And if you don't do what you said you're going to do, then what you said means nothing. I can cross you off the list. I know that. And you're not going to fool me again. Because you talked a good game, but your actions don't reflect that. Okay, I'm on to you. Going to be painful for you one day. But it doesn't necessarily mean just because you can read somebody that you are incredibly sophisticated or smart. Because I can read people because I've been doing this for years. I've been reporting for years. I'm getting paid to observe and figure out what people, what really makes them tick. So, and as a psychology minor at Hamlin, which is like kind of getting your PhD at most institutions, you know, a minor at Hamlin. But that doesn't mean that I'm smart. It means that's what I've studied. But it doesn't mean that intellectually I'm smart. And what I'm getting at here is, last night we had a battery dead at our house. Battery dead on one of the cars, okay? And it was dark out, granted. So it was my job to figure out how to charge the battery and get it started again. Now, many of you would say, well, that's a simple act. Ladies and gentlemen, meet Mike Max. Nothing that is mechanical or requires engineering or anything where you have to think is simple for me. I had to get the this is a really bad sign. I had to get the owner's manuals out of both vehicles to try to figure out on one vehicle where the battery was. And on the other one to figure out how to pop the hood. Okay, we're not real advanced here. You know, see what I'm saying? No one's ever said to me, Mike Max, you are so smart. No one's ever said that to me in my life. Unless they were lying to me, because, and then you knew that because you'd studied their human nature and you knew they were lying to me to get something else. They would never say that to me. Because they believed it, or unless they were really, really stupid. You'd never think that I was smart. So eventually, I figure out how to pop the hood on the one and where the battery is on the other. And then, of course, comes the, where are the cables? Okay, we got to pop, where are the cables? Oh, boy. I think they're in a duffel bag out there. Oh, they're in a duffel bag, and they're these rotten cables. They got, like, I don't know, forks and prongs on them. They're not just the standard cables. And so you go red to red and black to black. Now, I know that. And I hook them up, and I'm not getting a spark, and I'm trying, and it's still dead. So I go back, and I don't know what I did to play with it, but I saw a spark. And I know if you get a spark, that means you got something going, right? So I got the spark on both sides, and I said, I know this means something good because I got the spark. And I know I'm red to red and black to black. And I went, and it was the most beautiful sound. I turned it, and it started. It was just wonderful because it was like, I did this. Me, the dumbest person that I know when it comes to anything mechanical or anything that requires reading instructions that takes more than 30 seconds, and I did it. And, you know, I used some pictures, but I did it. And I started that car, and I got both cars back in place and the batteries off, and I shut the hood, and I went inside to celebrate my victory. And I went to check my phone for a text, and I couldn't find my phone. You know that feeling? And I'd use my phone as a flashlight because this was at night. And so I knew I probably left it in one of the two vehicles. And I went out there, and you know how this goes now. You can't find it anywhere, right? So you have somebody in your family call your phone, and mine was set to vibrate, and you hope you can pick up the vibration, right? We've all been down this road. If it doesn't have a ringer on. First car we tried, I didn't hear a thing, silent. Now I'm growing concerned. And then I think, well, maybe, you know, who knows where I put it. But I covered all the tracks. Go to the next car. Son calls the phone. I can hear it. I can hear the vibration. But we cannot tell where it's coming from. And so, you know, it's one of these, shut up, you know. Because we can hear it. We can both hear the vibration. And I'm throwing stuff around. I'm looking. I know it's here. And I can't make it out. And for the life of me, I can't figure out where the vibration's coming from. But I know it's there because we hang up, we call again, we know it's there. And my son says, I think it's coming from the front of the car. I said, what do you mean the front of the car? He said, I think it's in the car. And I go out and I lift up the hood of this car that I had now driven. And guess what's sitting there still in place? The cell phone. That somehow, by God's good grace, I didn't smash when I shut the hood. It had stayed in this perfect place so that when I drove the car, it didn't fall out of. I have no idea how this happened. How this had to be divine intervention. But there was the phone, perfectly preserved on the front underneath the cover of the hood that I had slammed to shut, and I had driven the car to make sure that it ran well. And my cell phone was still there. That's how stupid I am. That's how lucky I am. And I said, the only thing I said to my son, I looked at him and I said, son, I just want you to know one thing. You can never, ever, ever tell mom about this. Henry Lake when we come back.
Sports to the max.
Dave Lee tomorrow morning, the most talented radio personality in the history of this marketplace. He's the only guy I know that could do a morning show. He could do the afternoon show. He could do the midday shows. He could do the sports show. He could do play-by-play. You name it. He's the only person, but not just do it. Anybody can do it, but do it at a high level. I saw a son at the health club the other day. Ooh, man. His son stays in not good shape, but great shape. I mean, he is buffed, strong. And, yeah, I see him every once in a while at the health club, and he makes me feel inferior as I try to keep up. That's hard to do. Keep up at the health club with some of these folks. And yet it's so inspiring and invigorating to see. And one of the things that I've learned is the greatest anti-aging competitor that we have is if you want to work out, because your body will do things that you never envisioned. Even as you get older, you will turn back the clock as best you can. It's unavoidable. None of us can get through it. But you can delay it so much longer than you think. If you just get in there, lift some weights, and get on the treadmill, the Stairmaster, whatever it is. But the key is to look forward to it. And if you look forward to it, then it's not a workout. It's just what you do. And so the key is to trick the mind into a way that you can make it a pleasurable experience. And what I do is short stints on every machine, so I'm never on a machine for more than 10 minutes. And a lot of times just 5, then I move to the next machine. So, because I always say to myself, I can always do 5 minutes. For some people, it is they watch TV while they do it. Oh, my. Washington just hit 2 home runs against Justin Verlander. Soto just got one. And now they lead it 3-2 in the 5th inning. Oh, my. Wouldn't that be something if the visiting team won to the 6th game? Verlander, he didn't do it often, but man, I thought, you know, he's the ultimate gamer, and they've taken him downtown twice this inning. Henry Lake's coming up next. Looks like we got a good one brewing down there in Houston, Henry. Based to Henry. Yeah.
I just saw that home run in the newsroom as I was rushing down. Justin Verlander's 0-for, though.
Yes.
He hasn't won. I mean, he's won a World Series, but he hasn't won a game in the games that he's pitched in the World Series. Isn't that crazy?
But the last time around, he gave him some quality innings.
Yeah, no. He's been okay. No, I'm not saying he's a terrible pitcher. Yeah. I'm just saying, how about that for luck, though? Like, he doesn't have a win registered. Now, I know that the win-loss stuff is overrated in Major League Baseball. We totally get that. But a pitcher of his, you know, talent level.
If you asked, most people would say he's probably 5-0.
Yes,
you know,
that's what I'm saying.
You think, right?
Yeah.
The impression that he leaves is because, you know, he's been a good big game pitcher. You'd go, oh, yeah, I'm sure he's won lots of games.
Yeah, that's just the thing that's so interesting to me. So, yeah, this is going to be
this goes to game 7.
This is going to be a nail biter. Who are you? Are you rooting for a team?
No.
I'm actually rooting for the Washington Nationals.
They're the National League, though.
Yeah, but I don't like what happened with the Astros and the organization standing up for the assistant GM, knowing damn well that he was lying about what he did.
But I don't get that hang that on the players much.
No. I'm not hanging that on the players. But it's the organization. I mean, we root for organizations at times too.
Yeah,
so
I'm so.
And plus, Wash is a new player.
I would say that this is about as indifferent. I enjoy the game.
Yeah.
But I'm about as indifferent on this one as.
And I'm with you. We don't have a dog in the fight.
Sometimes there's a reason that you really want some team to win.
And I actually, and the other part of it is, I wouldn't mind a new team winning it.
Oh yeah.
Like the Astros won a couple years ago.
Yeah. And okay. Boom. Move over.
Yeah.
And what's weird?
Ooh, nice play.
All the leagues.
JJ Redick.
That there's
not JJ Redick. Josh Redick.
Winner of all the leagues.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't baseball. It's football, where they've got parity built in like no other league, and New England has dominated it like no other sport.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, and where the playing field couldn't be more even.
You know, the funny thing about the Patriots and how well that they've played, and they are playing out of their minds right now. Their defense is the part that's really kind of flying under the radar.
They fumble.
Yeah.
We're almost out. Okay.
Oh, we're done.
Henry, what do you got coming up?
I got Caleb Truex in studio along with Phil the Drill Williams and Tony Gargiulo. We're going to talk some boxing from 9:30 till 10. And also, Jim Wells passed away, Pioneer Press.
Absolutely. All next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.